Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on today's program, a look at the headlines from thetrumpet.com. Of course, the big story is what's happening down there in Texas and in Houston especially, historic flooding. So we'll have some information about that. Also in the second part of today's program, success. That's what everybody wants in life. How do you get it? What are the laws to it? We're going to take a look at some great principles that are often ignored, but are guaranteed to bring success. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're on at 101.3 KPCG and at kpcg.fm. There's also a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And any emails, please send those comments to comments@kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here with you on Monday. And, you know, whenever there's something going on, Grant, like a major flooding and so forth in a part of the country, you know, you're always extra thankful to be dry and safe and have things going on pretty normally. But Texas is really getting hammered right now.
Yeah, it did seem like we got some rain possibly as a result of the hurricane, but obviously none of the destruction that came along with it. I was watching some of the news coverage of that, and they went into that town of Rockport where I believe at least the first person died. I'm not sure if there's been a bunch more since, but there was one person from Rockport who died. They went and visited that town, and outside of the police, or I guess the police station, all of the police cars had all the windows blown out. And then there are these massive, thick flagpoles that were just broken in half, and they were in the middle of the street.
It's amazing. And then, of course, not just the destruction from the initial impact of the hurricane, now it's the flooding afterwards. They're saying it could be up to the level of Hurricane Katrina. Some of the reports are saying this is there was a 1 in 500 chance of a flood like this. And, of course, it's not done yet. The current forecast models say that Harvey's going to go back out into the Gulf and swing back around, and they're going to get hit again. So quite interesting. It's a developing situation. Like you mentioned, the death toll, it's not high right now. I think it's about 5, but they don't know. I mean, you just don't know what the total destruction is, because it's a several-day event at least. Top story today at thetrumpet.com is about that. Hurricane Harvey, another wake-up call for the U.S. The scenes coming out of Texas are breathtaking. When will we realize that America is cursed? You watch all the coverage today, and you're not going to hear much about God or curses or anything like that. You hear a lot about banding together, everyone working together, which are nice things, but you don't hear really any mention of God. I haven't to this point, and I don't imagine we will.
And even worse than that, people were still attacking the president on Friday night, right when the hurricane was coming in and blasting Texas. I flipped on CNN just to see what they would say about it, and they were criticizing the president for pardoning Joe Arpaio, that sheriff who was, I guess, convicted of abusing the law in trying to keep illegal immigrants out of the country, in Arizona especially. And then also they were criticizing the president for letting Sebastian Gorka go. It's just, why can't people, at least in a moment of crisis, avoid attacking the president and following their own agenda?
Well, the finger pointing's sort of starting already, even with the Houston mayor. People are saying, why didn't you evacuate? Why didn't you do this or that? And the lieutenant governor from Texas, I think it was him that came out and just said, you know, well, everybody just take a break. Just wait a second. Let's figure out what's going on here. And, of course, so it was a very serious situation down there in Houston. Trumpet Daily Radio Show talks about that today as well, a look at the disaster that is happening. And a book that we talked about here on Friday, the program you can find at kpcg.fm, is on Why Natural Disasters, a really important booklet to look at, especially at this time, because we're in the midst of a natural disaster, as they would call it. And the information you're going to find in that book, or you're here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, or we covered on Friday, that's information you're not going to get at CNN or Fox or any of these other news sources. They'll give you the rainfall totals, but they're not getting to the source of what some of these problems are.
And really, this is a time for reflection and consideration of why these things happen. Instead of pointing the finger at someone else or trying to change the subject, we really need to understand that this is happening for a reason.
Some of the just numbers are just amazing here. Washington Post says that Harvey may force 30,000 people into shelters while flooding will linger. Numbers are rising all the time. About 500,000 people they think are going to be affected. You know, Houston's the fourth biggest city in the U.S., which surprised me. I knew it was big, obviously. I didn't know it was the fourth biggest, so it's a massive area. One of the problems is a lot of concrete. Nowhere for the water to go. It doesn't go under the concrete. So lots of problems there. They say some of the quotes here from this article: a flood of this magnitude is an 800-year event, and it exceeds the design specification of our levees, according to Fort Bend County Judge Robert Hebert. And I saw, too, even with the meteorologists, they've had to invent new colors for their radar to show the heaviness of the rain. And so, I mean, it's changing just even the way they report on it because they haven't seen something like this.
And it seems like Houston gets flooded every year. I feel really bad for them. At least a few years in a row, I think they've been getting at least flooded. Now they've been hit by a full-on hurricane. That's a pretty tough place to be, and I believe they're also at a really low altitude. So they are obviously in a place where the water could pile up along with just the disasters hitting them in the first place.
Yeah, it's really quite something. Another quote here from William Brock Long. He's an administrator of FEMA. He says, "We have not seen an event like this. You could not draw this forecast up. You could not dream this forecast up." This morning I was watching Fox News, and the Texas lieutenant governor was on there, and he himself is flooded in and can't move, which is pretty amazing, so he had a call into the show. But his message was that the nation is uniting as one. And, you know, it's a nice message. I don't know that it's true, but it's a nice message. But again, no one's talking about God. He said, "We will rebuild. We will continue to be great." I don't know that that's the message that people need right now.
It sounds like they're trying to just patch up the Tower of Babel and live apart from God once again. Just like back in Genesis, they want to be invincible and unaffected by the powers of nature, which we can't even control at all.
Well, like we talked about a little bit Friday, and it's in this great book on why natural disasters. The point is brought up that when something catastrophic occurs, you know, you should stop and say, wait a second, is God trying to get a message across here? Are we being corrected in some fashion? And I was just thinking about this response here saying, you know, we will rebuild, we will continue to be great. And if you as a parent, if you're a parent and you have a child and they're really acting out and you say, hey, you know, and you give them some correction and they say, I'll take the correction, I'm going to rebuild and I'll keep being great. Hey, I mean, just humanly, what would you do? You'd say, well, who do you think you are? I mean, you didn't take it at all. And so it would be infuriating, wouldn't it? And I get that people want to be positive, but again, no mention of God, no mention of changing our ways. Have we done anything wrong as a nation? No mention of that.
Well, that type of mentality, too, it sounds like even just what the hurricane is doing, regrouping and coming back even stronger. That's exactly what people are trying to say they'll do in response to this hurricane, and yet it's still not over yet. They're going to get devastated even more, it looks like, if the weather projections are correct. At some point, we have to realize that maybe we need to do something about it, something that we can actually control.
So it's a really interesting situation, and it's going to go on here for several days. Make sure you do listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio show today and check out that top story at thetrumpet.com. Hurricane Harvey, another wake-up call for the U.S. And then, of course, the booklet that's offered there is Why Natural Disasters. And we'll put in a plug for our show from Friday. That was a good one, too, on Why Natural Disasters. We talked about that a fair bit. So you can check that out, and that's at kpcg.fm. Well, Grant, what is one of the things people love to have and want to have in life? Success. Being successful. It's elusive. Not a lot of successful people.
Mr. Armstrong wrote about how pretty much most all people who have ever lived have never even applied one of the seven laws of success that he wrote about in his booklet.
We're going to talk about this booklet today, in particular, the seven laws of success. And to lead into that, there's this really interesting chapter in Herbert W. Armstrong's autobiography. And again, you can get all of this literature free at thetrumpet.com. If you want to do that, you can read it there or have it sent to you. But the sixth chapter especially, it says Discovering Rules of Success. So Mr. Armstrong had this amazing life. He lived a long time into his 90s and had a lot of experiences. And he reflects on those in his autobiography and learned a lot of lessons as a young man about how to be successful, and brings out some of those experiences here in this sixth chapter of the autobiography.
And the thing that this chapter really brings out is that Mr. Armstrong learned through experience, sometimes the hard way, how to find success. It's not just that he sat down and thought up 7 points to put in a booklet one day. He has a lot of experiences here from working in sales and advertising, traveling the entire country, examining why certain businesses succeed while others fail, understanding why certain businessmen are able to put the laws of success that they at least subconsciously know about into practice in their lives. There are a lot of examples here, and some of them are quite humorous as well, of how he learned these laws.
Yeah, he was at this time period, again, this is, I guess it was in the before 1920, I think. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and get the exact date on that, but it's pretty early on, and he's a young man. He's learning about life. He's learning about, again, success and failure. And so he's out on these tours where he's going out and he's taking surveys. The company that he worked for wanted to know what makes people successful or what makes them fail. So he went out and he was doing these surveys and taking trains to get there. And he had this experience on these trains. I had a Pullman car, I guess it's called. I've never been on one of those. That's a long time ago. You ever been on anything like that?
No, I've looked into it lately because there's a lot of really high-end trains that go across the country. It seems like it would be just a fantastic trip.
Yeah, it's something that we kind of have gotten away from in this modern era. But I did read an article a while back about, I think it was in Japan, it's becoming a thing now where you can get on these really fancy trains. They're very expensive, but have this really neat trip. So, but it was more common back then to take a train. That was a way to get around. And so in these Pullman cars, they'd have restrooms, the ladies' restrooms on one side, the men's was on the other. And he said in these washrooms, especially on long trips, men would sit or stand and talk by the hour. I can't imagine doing that. Now these weren't like the modern restrooms we would think of. They had nice long leather sitting areas. You could relax. You could hang out. It's a little different than today. But he said conversations were opened as a matter of course. You didn't even introduce yourself. You just started talking. And he said men conversed familiarly as if they had been acquainted for years. And he got to meet and talk to some really great men. And that's one of his points. He learned about success by being around other successful men.
And he also just shows his incredible writing style, the way he's able to have some, I guess, some light sarcasm here, because he's talking about how pretty much in those restrooms they solve the problems of the world.
Right.
At one point he writes, "If only the heads of state of the world's great nations could have had the Pullman washrooms wired and the conversations tape recorded, they could have had the solutions to all their knotty and perplexing problems. Too bad tape recording came in after this honored American institution went out." So he used a little bit of exaggeration here, but it still underscores the fact that he learned a lot from these people, these really successful people who were in these Pullman cars. It wasn't just someone who had like 1 cent in his pocket. These were pretty high-end cars. The most successful people were riding on them.
Yeah, and it was great, like you said, because you didn't have to, you know, people wouldn't necessarily know what level of society you were at. So you could converse with great men that maybe you wouldn't run into otherwise. And they had conversations about lots of different things. Different era. I mean, people weren't distracted with their smartphones. They were actually having conversations. And he learned a lot. He said these were some of the best experiences of his young life.
Yes, that's a pretty incredible thing. And it just shows you as well how Mr. Armstrong always was, he was looking out for things that he could take lessons from. The fact that he put so much stock in these conversations and actually made the most of them like he did just shows you that he was always trying to learn, and he was always trying to take counsel from people who knew more than him. I think in a certain way, obviously, he had that youthful cockiness for a while, but still, he knew that certain people were experts, and he could learn a lot from them.
So, yeah, when he was on these train trips, again, he was conducting these surveys and wanting to find out, okay, why do some people succeed while others fail in business? And what's so great about doing a survey like that is, a person could sit back and, I guess, sort of try to figure it out in their own head and make some assumptions. But he went and asked successful businessmen and some that weren't so successful, what was the difference? And so they came up with a few things. One was lack of ability. A lot of them thought people that failed just didn't have enough ability. And in some cases, that would be true.
Right. And he also said lack of money. So these two things, it's almost like a lot of these people Mr. Armstrong asked were coming up with points that sort of made people who failed seem like victims of circumstance. Oh, well, I just don't have enough natural ability. I wasn't born with this talent. Or, oh, I just don't have the money, so I can never be successful. And Mr. Armstrong said, well, you could put two men in the exact same circumstances side by side, give them the same amount of money, give them the same amount of, I guess, resources, and they'd have similar skills, and yet one man could succeed and the other man would fail. Why is that? There has to be a deeper reason for it. There have to be certain laws that govern success that would determine why one man who is the same as the other would succeed while his counterpart fails.
Yeah, it's not just circumstantial reasons. And another factor that he brought up just in why people didn't succeed, and he thought maybe this was one of the more important reasons, was the old square peg in the round hole, where people just found themselves in jobs that they really weren't the best at for various reasons. And so he said, of course, both lack of ability and lack of money was a factor, but based on observation, getting at the facts that led either to success or failure in hundreds of businesses, I found, again, that the square peg in the round hole, in other words, so many men are misplaced in the wrong line of business for them. This coupled with the fact that the seven laws of success are not known or followed by most people. So we're going to get into those seven laws of success today. But it is an interesting point. It's a really bad deal to be a square peg in a round hole. I think we've all been that at times. I hope I'm not that right now. but I think we've all had that experience where we were trying to do something or we needed to do something and it just wasn't for us. We just couldn't quite do it right.
An example Mr. Armstrong brings out to illustrate this point is just how there are a lot of farmers he saw on these trips across the country who had a bit of jealousy against some of these merchants who were finding success. And the farmers thought, well, you don't have to get up early. You don't have to milk these cows. You don't have to plow the fields all day. You just sit around in your store and you rake in the money. That's way easy. I'm just going to sell my farm and get into being a merchant. And yet, when they did that, they realized how much harder it was to be a merchant, how many concerns that the merchants had that the farmers would have never even realized. The farmers didn't realize how merchants had to make sure they got the right type of merchandise into the store. They had to deal with salesmen who may be trying to dump a poor product into their store. They had to realize how to price certain items. There were so many details like that that farmers had no clue about. They were never educated in that field. They thought it was easy looking at it from the outside, so they jumped into a field where they were just extremely poorly equipped.
Yeah, that's the grass is always greener, right, on the other side. It's easy to look and say, well, that seems like that would be really easy. But again, and he talks, Mr. Armstrong talks in this chapter a little bit. It's a little bit of a digression, but it's kind of a funny story about baseball. And went and saw Ty Cobb play, who's a very famous baseball player. But he makes a point in there about athletes. And he said, watching these professional baseball players, it seemed a little boring at first. But then he realized, well, it's because they're so good at what they do, they make it look easy. There's not a lot of wasted motion. There's not a lot of wasted effort because they're just so professional. And that's true in business or in life or in anything. People that are really good at things make it look easy. Make it look easier than it is, a great musician, right? Well, how hard could it be? Well, it's because they're so good at it. And so it's easy to look at something and say, well, that seems great. I want to do that. But if you're the square peg in the round hole, you won't be able to have success like those great athletes, those great musicians, businessmen, you name it.
Right. So that just shows as well how hard work is great, but like if you're trying to hammer a nail into a board like a carpenter would, he's doing it efficiently. He's hitting the nail squarely every time. Someone else might be winding up and thrashing that nail, but only hitting it 30% of the time. So the hard work has to be combined with education. You have to have the skill set developed over time to even be ready for the right field. It just shows you that, I mean, people can look at a professional and say, well, what he's doing is easy. I'm not really that impressed, but really whenever you try to do it and realize that you're just putting in all of this extra energy that's not going anywhere, then you realize how good those people really are at what they do.
Yeah, that's a good example with the carpenter. Years ago, I was in a speaking class, and there was an individual giving a speech, and he was a carpenter. And he was, I forget the exact topic, but basically it was something about carpentry. And so he had brought a board with nails partway in it, and he just told a couple of guys, like, well, nail these in real quick while I'm getting going on the speech, and then that'll tie in. And he spoke for probably a minute or two and looked over, and they didn't have the nails pounded in. They were bent, and they were, and he was just so surprised because for him, he had done it so long. Oh, just easily nail those in. But if you don't have the experience, it's a harder thing, like you mentioned.
Right. And so we all need to, I guess, depending on what type of field we try to get into, of course, the education has to be there. The experience, like Mr. Armstrong did in those Pullman cars, he learned from people who have actually done those things before instead of thinking that he could just jump right in and do it.
Yeah, and that's why, I don't know, I love situations where it's sort of like an apprenticeship where you learn, because you get a chance to do the job and to figure out if you even like it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to know if you like it until you do it, or if, you know, if you're going to be good at it. So he says, then there, in his autobiography here, he says, then there are those seven laws of success. Most people, men and women alike, probably do not think of or apply a single one of these seven laws. These are of such importance that we have issued an attractive free booklet. By the way, you can get that at thetrumpet.com. on the subject, which the reader may receive upon request. So we're going to take a look at that book today, The Seven Laws of Success. Very few people know what they are or apply them, and that's why you don't see as much success as we would all hope in this world.
Right. There are specific laws that govern success, and Mr. Armstrong points out in that booklet as well, things like loyalty, honesty, those types of things obviously play into it. Having the right kind of character is important to being truly successful, but these seven specific laws, they give you a clear roadmap to the end goal.
Yeah, in the introduction to this book, The Seven Laws of Success, it's very, very encouraging. He said, here is the surprising answer to life's most difficult problem, proving that no human never need ever become a failure. And so it's easy enough to think that, well, you're going to fail. You know, there is sort of that, well, I'm just not a success, I'm a failure. But he says, nobody has to be a failure. All who have succeeded have followed these seven laws. The only way to success is not a copyrighted formula being sold for a price. You can't buy it. The price is your own application of the seven existing laws. So in finding the information in this booklet, that's a great start. But then the challenge is actually putting them into practice. That's always the hardest part.
Right. It is extremely difficult. And it's actually hard without the seventh point at the very end to even know how to apply the first six right.
Yeah. So we'll take a look briefly at these seven laws. We're going to just hit the high spots today. You need to read the whole booklet, The Seven Laws of Success. It's free, and it's at thetrumpet.com. Like you said, it's not being sold for a price. It's a freebie. The first law of being successful in life, he says, is to fix the right goal. In other words, the very first law of success is to be able to define success. Once you have learned what success is, make that your goal in life. And he gives the example of several people, specifically or just in general, where maybe they made a lot of money. Maybe they had material possessions. Was that success? Did it lead to ultimate success for them? It's part of it, certainly. I don't think poverty is success on any level, but that's not all there is to it. But it is part of it. And so first thing you need to do is figure out what success is, and then make that your life goal.
Exactly. And Mr. Armstrong pointed out as well how the vast majority of the rich, the famous, the powerful in the world have probably applied the first six laws, and it just happened to be that their first goal was about acquiring money, about acquiring status and fame, being recognized, having friends in high places, things like that. And they, of course, achieved that goal. But what he brings out is, are we sure that's the right goal? He shows so many examples of how even those who applied the first six laws and achieved great success, as most people would define success in the world, a lot of them ended up having five marriages, or they would commit suicide, or they would have their business go under, and then they would never be the same again. is that really true success? Is it true success when as soon as someone dies, everyone at the institution that person founded forgets who that person even is, like 10 or 30, 20 years later? If the success doesn't last beyond this life, is it true success? So he did ask a lot of hard-hitting questions there that it probably would astound quite a few people.
Yeah, I think Hollywood does a great job at making success look like something that it's not. I mean, just even whether it's the movies or it's the stars in the entertainment industry, they make things look great, very shiny on the surface, but then you see stories come out where their lives are miserable. They look great on the surface, but they haven't found true success. So the challenge is to see through all of that and really find true success in life.
Right. And another thing with so many of those people, it's like they had to be obsessive in that one area to get to the point where they are. Most athletes or CEOs of huge corporations, they're so successful because they're always driving themselves, but it's obsessive and it's excessive in this one area. And so that's kind of how they treat their entire lives, and that's why they have all these vices. They go hard in a lot of immoral areas as well, because whatever they're doing, they have to go full speed into it.
Yeah, so it's important, number one, to fix the right goal. Most people never think of having any purpose in life, Mr. Armstrong says. They are not going anywhere in particular. And so you do have those at the top, I suppose, that really did get after at least a part of a goal. But then most, unfortunately, kind of fit into this other category where they never think of having really any purpose in life, just kind of buffeted around by circumstance, I guess, and kind of just, you know, are born into a situation and stay in that situation. We see that in many communities in the United States and, of course, around the world. And it doesn't have to be that way, but a lot of times people just, I guess, accept their surroundings and feel like, well, this is all there is, not realizing that they could purposefully plan to do something different and then go achieve it.
Right, and that first law of fixing the right goal, that can be talking about a series of smaller goals as well. There's the ultimate goal that involves life beyond this physical life, but there are also a lot of really constructive, valuable goals that just give us a purpose, even for people who don't understand the incredible human potential, the spiritual level of it. There are fulfilling goals that at least give people direction and give them fulfillment in a certain way.
Yeah, fixing the right goal is important, and it takes some time to think about that, and takes experiences too, I guess, to kind of get to that point. The second law of success after you fix the right goal, and again, we're just hitting the high spots today, so there's a lot more in here to look at in the booklet, but the second law of success is education or preparation. He says, how can one expect to accomplish his purpose unless he acquires the know-how? One thing we need to know about life, and many do not, is that humans do not come equipped with instinct. We're not born just knowing how to be successful or knowing really anything. And so we do have to get the proper education for whatever we're hoping to do. I think we'd like to think we just naturally know, but that's not the case.
Right. And he talks about how if you want to be a carpenter, you would want to study into that field. Perhaps, like you mentioned, get an apprenticeship, applying yourself in that field of knowledge. Mr. Armstrong gave a kind of a sad but funny story in that chapter, Discovering the Rules of Success, from the autobiography that we mentioned earlier. And in that, he was talking to a merchant who could not seem to make any profits on anything he was selling. And so Mr. Armstrong asked him, well, you know, what are you buying it for? And then what are you turning around and selling these products for? And sure enough, the guy was just making a simple mathematical error. He didn't have, as Mr. Armstrong brought out, the education that he needed in that field. He didn't know math well enough to even know what to set the price as. So it does matter in whatever field it is. Education can help you avoid some pretty devastating yet simple mistakes.
Yeah, I read that example, and I had to think on it for a while to understand where the error was.
Right.
That shows you I should not be a merchant. But I'm like, now? What was he doing? He has great examples in that entire autobiography, and then, of course, even ties a lot of that into this booklet here on the seven laws of success. Second law being education or preparation. He says we have to learn, to study, to be educated, to be prepared for what we propose to do. One of the first things we need to learn is that we need to learn. You know, it doesn't stop really either in life. I guess it's easy to think, well, once I get through whatever level of education I'm going through, I'm done. And I can just go to work and then you know, go do something else. But we can never stop learning. We can't. We always have to be growing and getting more knowledge, more experience. So, but that's an important thing to remember. We have a need to learn all of the time.
Mr. Armstrong's Uncle Frank, who basically guided Mr. Armstrong's life for about 11 years, told Mr. Armstrong that education comes through books, through lectures, from personal experience, travel, contacts, a lot of different things. It's not just confined to the classroom. That's what an apprenticeship is for. And that's what personal experience is for, getting out, seeing the world, understanding how things work. And education does go a lot beyond just 12 or maybe 16 years of classes.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like I think I've mentioned this before, but this example really stuck with me. I was watching a program where they were interviewing a pretty famous journalist from years ago, and he said they asked him the difference between journalism today versus when he was more involved. And he said, well, years ago, if you wanted to write a feature piece on, let's say, Iraq, for example, he said you would go live in Iraq for a couple of years. You would learn some of the language. You would communicate with the locals. You'd immerse yourself in the culture. And after that, then you'd write your piece about Iraq. And that's what would make you knowledgeable. He said today people basically, you know, Google it, read a few things, and then write their expert piece on it. And I think that highlights the way education has changed. We have a lot of information, but maybe don't take the time to get all of the education through personal experience and other things. Google can't give you everything. It can't give you those personal experiences. So we do see a difference in the way that knowledge is being disseminated and acquired, I think.
Well, that's right. And a big difference is just that education now is probably just more shallow. You see that in schools where they're trying to slow it down so that the worst student in the class can understand it, instead of speeding it up and raising the level so that that kid has to reach a higher standard to excel in the class. They have that no child left behind policy where basically you can't even hardly fail people. Things like that are not helping people get educated. We're not trying to raise the standard like we should.
Maybe they should call it Nobody Gets Ahead.
Nobody Gets Ahead.
No one left behind, nobody gets ahead.
It's almost like it does happen a lot where the worst student ends up holding the rest of the class hostage because you can't really challenge the brightest students or the ones who are working the hardest because the one who's at the back is trying to catch up still.
Yeah, that's an interesting educational system we find ourselves in today. Lots of changes there. And a lot of them are not very helpful, but proper education is essential. Interesting headline or a statistic from the Washington Post. I thought this would be interesting. Only 27% of college grads have a job related to their major. So when you're talking about preparing for life, and that sometimes that's okay. That doesn't necessarily mean that's a problem. But I think a lot of young people go into college without a clear goal. Not they feel like, well, I should go to college. Like that's the goal. But what do you do when you get there? What kind of a major do you go after? Only 27% have a job related to their major. So it's an interesting statistic. Seems a little low, like it should be higher.
Well, that's just a perfect example of being buffeted about by circumstance, like Mr. Armstrong wrote, not even having real control over the direction that a person's life takes, getting trapped in a job that's not fulfilling, maybe even a marriage and a family that wasn't founded the right way and isn't happy. Too many people don't take control of the factors in life that will lead to success.
Yeah, and you see, actually, there's different blogs out there where people have they've tried to apply these later in life, not exactly the seven laws of success, but they've come to some sort of an idea about success. And one of the things that they usually do is they do try to start taking control of things and say, well, I'm in a job I don't like. I'm living in a place I don't want to be at. I'm in a situation I don't like. And they actually start making changes. And then it inspires other people. So that is important to take control, even at the earliest stages of getting that right goal and getting the right education and not just be floating around out there because it's easy enough to do that. And then, you know, 30 years down the road, you say, where am I? How'd I get here? I don't want to be here. And not that it's ever too late to apply these, but the earlier you get a start, the better off you'll be.
Exactly. And that just shows the importance of applying the first two goals early so that you don't have to realize when you're 60 or 70 that maybe you need to reevaluate what has happened to your whole life. That's just an example there of maybe not having a clear goal in mind, going to college for 4 or 6 or 8 years sometimes and then not even going into the right field. What good was all that education? Was that education the right kind if it wasn't even preparing you for the future?
You know, I was watching this show the other week, and I don't watch it a lot, but it happened to be on, and it's kind of interesting. MasterChef, I think it is. Mm. They're always trying to become these great chefs. And so my wife loves the show because she likes to cook, and I like to watch it too sometimes. And there was this guy, and he didn't make it into the top 10. He failed. He made some mistakes. Obviously very good chef, but not that good. And he was a Harvard student, and he has all this education towards, I think, I don't forget what the field was, but anyway, something that his parents had done. He was following in their footsteps. And so he gets eliminated from the show, and he's like, I'm not going to waste my time with that other stuff. I'm going to be a chef, which maybe he will be. But I thought, well, you put all that education into some other field, you clearly weren't good enough to make it into the top 10 of this. I mean, maybe it would be better to go back and get that other education. I know you like cooking, but it just seems strange to spend all that time and all that other education and then chase this other thing, which he didn't succeed at anyway. So I think people get kind of conflicted on what they want to do in life a lot of times.
Exactly. And how good could that chef have been if maybe his education was geared toward him becoming a chef? He's already on a show that is broadcast nationally. He could be a lot better if his education were pointing him in that direction. Instead, he's completely veered off of what his education was.
Yeah. And Mr. Armstrong has some good examples in his autobiography of how he kind of got off track of his main goal. It's early on when he wanted to be in advertising, and he kept kind of getting sidetracked, and he had to get back on track for that goal. Obviously, he ended up with a completely different, not completely different, but a different calling in a way later in life, but that advertising really helped him. But that is easy enough to do, to get distracted away from your goal, have your education kind of wander in different directions and not be as focused as you should be. So the second law of success is, after finding that goal, get educated so you can do it. The third law is a big one, of course, good health. Very important. You can't do a lot when you're dead, from what I understand. So good health is essential to being a success in life.
Yes, and Mr. Armstrong had a lot of good insight from the Seven Laws of Success booklet, his booklet about the Seven Laws of Radiant Health as well, just how these are some simple principles. It doesn't always involve a really strict diet or workout regimen, but there are a few laws where if you apply them, you're fully healthy, you have tons of energy, you're able to accomplish a lot more. You can't do too much if you're feeling sickly all the time. And I think a lot of us have experienced things like that, pretty similar to that. These are principles that you can look around and you can learn from it. And it's also based in the Bible. There's a lot of health principles in the Bible.
Yeah, and he talks a lot about just having temperance and moderation. And he says, so man is just what he eats. Some of the most famous physicians and surgeons have said that 90 to 95% of all sickness and disease come from faulty diet. And he brings out the point that sickness and disease is not a natural state for us. We shouldn't be sick. I think we accept it sort of like, well, I guess I get sick, that happens. But we're not supposed to. We're supposed to be healthy. That's the normal state. Disease, sickness, that's broken laws in the body. So part of it's reorienting our thinking to think that, well, wait a minute, sickness isn't normal. I should be thinking about what I'm putting into my system if I'm not feeling well.
Right, and he talked about specific laws of health that if broken, they do lead to pain, sickness, and then even death if it gets severe enough. And the stats are alarming, just the amount of unhealthiness we have in this country, even though we're the richest, wealthiest, greatest country in the world. There's still just alarming numbers of people who have heart disease or at least a huge vulnerability for a heart attack. So many other issues like that. Obviously, obesity, you can look around and see that that's an issue. Why is it the case that in the midst of all this abundance, we are still suffering physically?
Yeah, lots of things that are being eaten that aren't good. In some cases, people don't realize it. In some cases, I don't care. It goes a couple of ways. We had a really great comment sent in recently here. You can send comments to comments@kpcg.fm. It relates to this. We talked a little bit last week about some of the health laws, and the comment says, really enjoying the show. Love hearing about the health subject. Of the 7 laws of health listed by Mr. Armstrong, do you know the most important one to focus on, the one thing that is missing from your life? So that's an interesting question. I suppose it would depend on the person. I would think that 2 of the laws, obviously the food is very important, and also the mental aspect of things. So I don't know if one's the most important, but like he says here in the 7 laws of success, about 90 to 95% of sickness comes from faulty diet. So I would think that would be pretty high on the list of important health laws.
That one's quite undeniable. And I'm just trying to think of examples of people who seem to eat right, but don't necessarily exercise all the time. Those people actually seem more well-rounded and healthy, not well-rounded literally with their body type, but they seem more healthy than those who work out all the time and eat nothing but junk. Yeah. So I think that the eating right point is even more important than exercise. If you had to pick one that's more important.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, there was a lady I was somewhat familiar with a few years back, and she was overweight, and then she started to run quite a bit to get into better shape, and she did. She lost quite a bit of weight, as you would expect. Ran pretty, I would say, maybe too much, getting into, running 40, 50-mile races and, of course, things like that quite often. And had a trainer and was needing more calories because of how much she was burning. And the trainer said, well, just eat a candy bar or something, which isn't proper nutrition. Anyway, eventually got injured, and I don't know how much she runs anymore, but got injuries, and I just thought that was an interesting thing the trainer had said, because you look to a trainer to give you good advice, and yeah, you do need more input into your body, but that's a bad diet, and the physical output wasn't sustainable, even probably with a good diet. So people tend to go to extremes in exercise a lot of times, but that diet is so foundational all the time, your entire life.
And everything you just said also applies to that 6th point. It ties into that about avoiding bodily injury, because if you are exercising all the time but not fueling the body the right way, there is that incident of a few years ago in that college basketball game where the guy's leg just snapped in half.
Oh, yeah.
He was just like jogging down the court. Nothing happened. No one touched him, and his leg snapped in half. Now, is that an example of maybe him fueling his body the right way if that happens? Sometimes if you push it really hard with the exercise and the fuel going into the body is not right, it's just like, you know, putting the wrong type of fuel in a car. The car is going to break down by the side of the road. No matter how clean the car looks, no matter how fast it can go, it's going to break down a lot faster because the fuel is wrong.
Yeah. So diet's very important. And there's quite a few, there's about 7 good laws there for health. And we talked about that last week, and you can find information about that as well. But that ties into that 3rd point for success in life, which is good health. It's hard to have much drive or anything else when you're not feeling well. That is the 4th law of success, drive. Mr. Armstrong said, after all, success is accomplishment. It is doing. They say any old dead fish can float downstream, but it takes a live one to swim up. An inactive person will not accomplish. Accomplishment is doing. And then he makes the point out that half-hearted effort might carry one a little way towards the goal, but it never gets far enough to finish it. Probably one of the big things we'd all run into in life, I think, or have had experience running into, is having a pretty good goal of some kind, giving it some effort for a time, and then not seeing it through. I think we could probably all relate to that in some ways.
Mr. Armstrong did say that the right goal should arouse ambition. So if we naturally have passion and zeal for the goal that we're trying to accomplish, then we will have drive. Mr. Armstrong said we will absolutely have drive if the goal is the right one. And so it does get back to that 1st point. You can see how step by step these goals just build on top of each other. Mr. Armstrong, even when he was a lot younger, he was known for pounding the pavement. He would walk really fast and with a lot of energy and gusto to try to sell ads, especially whenever he was on that type of a job. And then, of course, people just knew him as someone who was fired up for whatever he was trying to do. And I think people want to be around others like that, people who have that kind of energy, that kind of enthusiasm for what they're doing, because it is infectious. You want to have friends who are passionate, because then that passion rubs off on you.
Yeah, actually, I was talking to my son the other day. We were watching a football game, and he saw some of the celebrations there, and he commented that one of his classmates that he knows, one of the things he really likes about him is he gets excited when they're playing sports and one of them does well. And he was just saying it really makes a difference when he gets out there and is all excited and showing that drive and excitement for what they're doing. And we've all been in those situations, probably on both sides, where somebody was really excited, had a lot of drive, and it kind of built, and other people did it. And then where somebody just was a little more of the dead fish, I guess, and the whole thing gets deflated pretty quickly. So personal drive, it not only helps yourself, it helps people around you.
It really does boost morale, and that's just so big in day-to-day life, that seventh point of radiant health, as well as the positive mental attitude. So if we even had to pick a most important point there, that's up there as well, because just being positive, having a purpose to strive for every day and to really have a reason to be driven is extremely important. Mr. Armstrong, he has written about multiple times where he hired himself a job. He would walk in or he'd call someone on the phone and say, "Well, I have the capabilities you need to work here, and you are going to need me desperately, so I'll give you a couple of weeks to carve out a position for me to figure out how you're going to pay me, and then I'll be back on Monday, 8 a.m. sharp, and I'll be working for you." And so that, what kind of a person who is lazy or reluctant or half-hearted could ever do something like that?
Yeah, you've got to be able to then fulfill your position when you show up. So that's important too. But I had that happen to me one time with a job where the potential I was going to get it, and they were kind of dragging their feet, and I'd call back every, I don't know, a few days and just check in. And so eventually I did get hired, just back when I was in high school. And when I came in, the lady that hired me, that's what she said. She said, "Well, you just kept calling." So, you know, either I wore her down, she was just sick of the phone calls, which probably was true, or just the fact that I kept pushing for it. So, you know, it's easy enough to try something once and look for a particular job or something and have them be like, "I don't know," and walk away. But sometimes coming back helps. I mean, you got to have enough wisdom, I guess, to know square peg and round hole versus I just quit too early. And you got to kind of think about that and have some wisdom to know which is which.
That's right. The point about drive doesn't just mean going head first, eyes closed, in whatever direction you come up with on a whim. Obviously, it has to be the right foundation. The goal has to be right. The education has to be right. And Mr. Armstrong brings up how health and drive are also connected, and how you have to be healthy to even have drive. So building physical health is something to focus on before even getting to that point, really.
Yeah, like you mentioned, they all build on each other. And that leads into the fifth point of success. Again, these are the seven laws of success written about by Herbert W. Armstrong. It's a free book at thetrumpet.com. A lot more in there than what we're talking about today. We're just hitting the high spots for you. But the fifth point is resourcefulness. When complications, obstacles, unexpected circumstances appear to block your path, you must be equipped with resourcefulness to solve the problem, overcome the obstacle, and continue on your course. Every job has that situation that come up. Every life has that, where something that you didn't expect shows up, and now you have to figure out how to get around it. And some people are very good at very positively solving it, and then sometimes people quit. And it makes a huge difference whether or not you'll be successful or you won't in life.
And resourcefulness is the point that is for emergencies. When something goes wrong, we could have the most perfect plan in the whole world, have done everything possible to prepare for it, and here we are, the day where we find out if it all is going to come to fruition the way it should, and all of a sudden just disasters are taking place left and right. And Mr. Armstrong asked the question, do you remain cool, unexcited, unemotional? Are you able to think quickly and come up with a solution that will patch it all together? Mr. Armstrong also gave an example of how he was driving from Iowa to Oregon, and his car just kept breaking down. The trip took him something like 18 days. his car kept breaking down on the side of the road, and he kept having to figure out ways to fix it, even though he wasn't necessarily a mechanic, and somehow they still got there. And so that's just kind of what it takes sometimes. The opposite of resourcefulness is just panicking, going into a complete meltdown as soon as something goes wrong. And that is pretty common. That's easy to do.
Yeah, and you find that if you do that, once you do calm down, you're in this. It's the same circumstances. Mm-hmm. So you still have to figure it out. So, but yeah, that's a That was a long trip out there. Those are not the those are the old roads and the old cars. Right. So, but the thing that was a little better about them was I think they were a little easier to fix. Mm-hmm. In some ways, you could kind of get in there and figure things out. And yeah, it's never a good feeling when you go get up in the morning, get ready to go, and you get a flat tire. Yeah. I've had that happen. You're like, come on, why? But there is a way around it. I suppose if we weren't resourceful on some level, we'd all just go back to bed and mm-hmm. never go to work again, never go anywhere. Oh, flat tire, can't go anywhere.
Yeah, I guess you just have to accept it.
Got
to
fix it at some point and get moving. The sixth point here for the seven laws of success is perseverance or stick-to-itiveness. Mr. Armstrong said, I know. I have reached that point more than once. I, too, had everything swept out from under me in the flash depression of 1920, and then he had other problems there, too. He had built up a very successful business, if you know about him, several, in fact, only to have them disappear in depressions and things that were beyond his control. He hadn't done anything wrong personally in terms of his business, and still it's all gone. We do face that sometimes. What do you do? We have to persevere. That's the sixth point, perseverance.
And if I remember correctly, his businesses completely crashed in 1920, then again in 1926, and then again in 1929. So the fact that he had something that could collapse three different times means that he had built something up three different times. And even after the first collapse, he built up two very successful businesses once again, only to see those also get crushed. And then he realized, of course, that God was directing him somewhere else. And that's the whole reason why his businesses kept collapsing. It took a lot of perseverance for him, and yet he said he knew of people who were very famous, very successful in the world, who actually just committed suicide as soon as their business went under. Those same depressions that took out Mr. Armstrong's business has actually caused other people to end their lives.
Yeah, that's one of the sad things about that time period is a lot of people, they couldn't handle the fact that they had lost so much. They had built everything up, and all of a sudden it was gone, and they couldn't deal with that. And a lot of times did end their journey right there in terms of their physical life anyway. So perseverance, stick-to-itiveness, very, very important for everybody, no matter what stage of life you're in or what level, I guess, of success you'd be at. And the seventh law, this is the most important one, and one that even though, as Mr. Armstrong says in his book, a lot of successful people in the world have kind of come to some form of the first six, they don't come to the seventh, the most important, which is contact with and guidance and continuous help from God. And he says a couple things really interesting here. He says, is it possible that the living God might be a factor in determining the success or failure of one's life? Few have thought so. And he says later on, wouldn't it seem strange that if there is a compassionate creator standing ready to help and willing to give us emergency help as a last resort, wouldn't it seem to make sense that you could go to him earlier than that? Because that's what does happen, as he points out in the booklet, Seven Laws of Success. People try everything they can think of, and then at the very end, when they're about to die or whatever, the tragedy is about to come to the full, they cry out to God and help. What about before it all started? What about when you're just starting out? What about, like he says, when you're trying to fix the right goal? How about having God as a, he even talks about having God as a business partner in relation to tithing and other things like that. That's a law people don't think about as much. Some do, even if they don't know a lot about God, but they do the best they can, and they will find success too. There's lots of examples of that.
That's true. Someone like Dave Ramsey, I believe, has also mentioned the importance of tithing or having some sort of offering given to a good cause, and he's a financial guru, extremely successful. And because he is giving with his money, it seems like he makes a lot more. So even just on a secular level, someone like him who knows a few things about godly principles and applies them is blessed very much for it.
Yeah. So, and he brings out the point here, as we just mentioned, that when you're going to that first one of fixing a right goal, that's where you really need to put the seventh one into practice as well. You need it all the way along, of course, but you know, what direction should you go? What goal should you have in life? What defines success? Again, if you're looking to the Bible, you're going to have a little bit of a different definition than maybe somebody that doesn't believe in the Bible would have. And even I suppose a lot of religions in the world, their definition of success a lot of times doesn't come from the Bible. They might say, well, you know, you should live in poverty and give everything away. And, well, God doesn't say that either. And then you have the what they call the prosperity gospel, where they say, well, if you give money to a certain group, all of a sudden money's going to start falling out of the sky for you. God says in the Bible, and thankfully it's been revealed and written about with Mr. Armstrong and his writings there, and particularly in this book, The Seven Laws of Success.
I love how he goes through at the end of that booklet how the seventh law of success just changes everything. He goes through each point one by one. He says with fixing the right goal, well, that involves eternal spiritual life because the Bible says it. We know that that is the ultimate goal, and every smaller goal should be leading us to that. He talks about how education, that should be founded on the Bible, but of course you want to branch out from that foundation. Health, the body is supposed to be a temple of the Holy Spirit. God wants us to prosper and be in health. It says drive, if you have that right focus on the kingdom and that potential, you absolutely will have drive, Mr. Armstrong said. Resourcefulness, wisdom comes from God, Mr. Armstrong brings out, and you can always ask for more of it. And of course, perseverance, when you have such a great purpose in life, you would never want to quit. The whole point of this life is enduring to the end.
Right, and that's what's exciting about this book, The Seven Laws of Success. It's not just talking about success in this life. It is, but then it's talking about success beyond that. And that's what a lot of people find out at the end of their lives. Or they made a huge success in certain ways, and they think, well, for what? What am I going to do with this all? You know. And so gives you good insight into not only success in this life, but moving on into eternity as well. There's a lot written there. And the Seven Laws of Success about that, make sure you get it. It's a free booklet, and it's at thetrumpet.com. You can read it there or request it and have it sent to you. Definitely something to look into. Make sure you check out thetrumpet.com today as well. Hurricane Harvey, another wake-up call for the U.S., and listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show also about that topic today. So that's all the time we have for today here on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.